Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. There's nothing quite like a nice, serene walk through the woods. The calming effects that nature seems to have on myself personally just makes it seem like a natural high. I love going out and hiking out there in the dense forest, but I must admit, there have been multiple times where I have felt that I'm not alone, and that something was watching me. Whether it be an animal or something more nefarious, I couldn't tell ya. But the feeling always remains the same. Downright creepy. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. I appreciate you all coming back for another episode. It's good to see you here. Today, these viewers sent in some downright creepy and allegedly true experiences from deep within the woods. As always, if you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. It's stories like yours that help keep this series going. Now, without further ado, let's get into these creepy and allegedly true stories that'll keep you up tonight. I'm not really sure what this thing is. We call it the red-eyed son of a B-word. I'm from Eastern Tennessee, and around here we have the Big South Fork National Park. I live maybe 5 to 10 minutes away from it at this time. I and a friend of mine wanted to visit a place we called No Business. I never knew why it was called that, but I do now. It's because you have no business being there. I had a 4x4 89 Ford pickup at the time, and I decided I wanted to go on a ride and sip a few beers. About halfway down this dark, long, one-lane gravel road, there was a break with a mud hole you have to go through. I was a bit tipsy, so I hit the mud hole fast and killed the engine. We tried to crank it, and it wouldn't start for us. Then we heard what sounded like something big running up the road behind us. It got right out of sight of our flashlights, and it was silent again. No crickets, frogs, or anything. Dead silence. We kept trying to crank the truck, and it wouldn't fire up, so we decided to hike back home to get another vehicle to pull it back. As we were walking, we heard footsteps in the trees next to us. Like, it was parallel to us in the woods. We kept shining our lights over at it, and never seen a damn thing. When we would walk, it would walk. And when we stopped, it would take 2 extra steps and stop. Finally, I screamed, "Stop messing with me!" And it let out a low growl that turned into a deep howl. Then, we saw it. 2 glowing red eyes rose up from the bushes. We ran as fast as we could. When we got back to my place, my friend suggested he stayed there for the night. After we calmed down, I decided to go to bed. I woke up sometime around 4:30 to my front door being wide open and my friend passed out on the floor. When I woke him up, he said he heard someone on the porch and he was half asleep and wasn't thinking right. When he swung open the door, he didn't see anything. Then he felt hot breath hit him and he looked up. Hanging from the rafters on the porch was what looked like a dog with glowing red eyes hanging upside down and staring right at him. He said it had an almost human-like body, and it was very muscular. Then he said he passed out from fear. I've never witnessed this thing again. The next morning we went back and I got my truck and I've never been back to that area. Thanks for reading my story, and always, stay away from No Business Creek. For some context, it was around April when this happened. I'm 17 years old and a girl. I live in the deep south of Alabama. I'm not sure what it was, but it was something. It is a very short, very weird thing that happened that I just can't seem to, like, push out of my mind, you know? Well, anyway, here's the story. It was around 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I decided I was cooped in the house too long, so I decided to take my dog, Hank, for a walk. He is a 4-year-old dachshund. He is normally relaxed and quiet on walks. Well, where I live, there are some wooded power lines behind an abandoned school. The power lines are a good place to ride and walk, so normally that's the route I'll take. We make it into a few trees that leads into a trail that goes into the power lines. That's when Hank started to be on guard. His tail was pointing straight up, which scared me. I keep a small pocket knife on me, so just in case it's a crackhead, I pull it out and keep walking. That's when the smell hits me. If you've ever been hunting, you know what I'm talking about. That was the smell of a deer's poop, busted, and the smell of decay. I pushed it aside, cause I'm used to that rancid smell, but it quickly disappeared just as fast as it showed up. Following that was a feeling that I was being watched. My dog kept on guard, but I pushed through it and went into the trail. About 2 or 3 minutes on the trail, the smell comes back and then goes again. This scares me a bit, but, well, you know, I'm thinking that it could just be an explainable occurrence. Thinking back, I should have left. I passed through the power lines and went into a trail again. I and Hank are fine. He is relaxed, and I am too. About 5 to 10 minutes into this walk now, I smell that smell and feel like I'm being watched again. I still have my knife out just in case. Hank is on guard once more. I decided to just ignore it and go deeper into the woods. Now, we are somewhere around 30 minutes into this walk, and dread comes over me once again. We're almost to a fork in the trail. One side which is left that leads to a hunting club, the right leads into another part of the city I live in. I take the right, and we keep going. On the road that I'm about to hit, there used to be an old school, probably about 80 years ago or so, and it's heard, at night you can hear kids laughing and walking down the road. Well, once I hit the gate on that road, the feeling comes back and I decided to turn around. The feeling leaves and I head home. Now I've been gone for about 2 hours and walk over 4 miles, but that's my story and I hope you read it. I'm not sure what these feelings meant, if something was following me, if the woods and trails around that school are haunted, or what, really. I would love to know anything in the comments down below. In the spring of 2010, my friends and I were really into finding and exploring haunted places. We binge-watched over 50 hours of haunted movies and came up with the rules for going to haunted places. Some of these rules were ridiculous and served no real purpose, but a few of them were legitimately for our own safety. As of now, I can't remember all of the rules, or even most of them if I'm honest, but the ones I do remember that will come into play, I will mention when they become relevant. One night we decided to go looking for a house along the river that we had heard about. We heard some truly horrific acts had happened there. I won't get into specifics, as it does get truly disturbing. Needless to say, there were 12 of us spread out along the area, and we could not find this house for the life of us. Although we didn't find anything along the river matching the description, I did come across an abandoned-looking house out of the corner of my eye. Having said nothing about it, I wanted to check it out in the daylight before going in the dark. One, I wanted to make sure it was actually abandoned, and two, I wanted to make sure it was something worth going to. The next day, I took my friend Zach, who everyone called PK, short for Poop Kid, after a wrestling tournament where he got slammed on the ground and literally crapped on his opponent. This name he owned and actually ended up loving, but I'm getting away from the point. We circled the area I saw the house in the night before, trying to find an overgrown two-track or something that led to the house. We found nothing. After about an hour or so, I just said screw it and parked on the side of the road on a spot somewhat hidden in case someone did live in this house. We didn't want to freak out the owners. Approaching the house, which was a few hundred feet into the woods, the fact that I even saw this house in the middle of the night through all the trees was a miracle. We were walking up to the front door. We noticed that it had a spot for a padlock on the door, but had nothing on it. Pushing this old wooden door open, we saw a thick layer of dust on everything. The inside of the house looked as if it hadn't been touched in decades. The interior was filled with extremely tattered and torn blankets on the furniture, and tons of candles burned down to the base. As we explored, we found it had pull-down stairs to the attic. Naturally, we went up to see what was there. Ascending the stairs, there was a wooden bed frame with an old, musty-smelling mattress, with an old-looking quilt placed on it. There was a wooden chest in the front of the bed, and we opened to see what was inside. There were several old yearbooks and just personal items inside. Talking it out a little bit, we decided to take a few items with us and do a little research on the house. We took an old yearbook and a picture hanging on the wall. We broke one of our rules without a second thought. Take nothing. Getting back to PK's house, the first thing we did was try to find out the owner of the house. The yearbook gave us a small idea of a time frame. It was from the 1940s. Finding specific info on the house itself was difficult considering it was literally in the middle of the woods with no address. Getting annoyed by our lack of results, we decided to ask PK's mother about the area as she did grow up in the area. She told us that she didn't really remember much about it, besides her mother always telling her to stay out of those woods. So naturally, we went to his grandmother to find out more information. Pulling into his grandmother's driveway, she greets us with a friendly hello. PK, without exchanging the greetings, jumps right into the questioning and asks her if she knew anything about the house in the woods a couple of miles away. Her pleasant smile faded, and she got serious. "How do you know about that house?" she said, very sternly. We explained what had happened so far and told her about the yearbook and pictures we took. She sighed and sat down, getting ready to tell us something she obviously wasn't comfortable talking about. She started off telling us the house formerly belonged to a woman named Hazel. She was a recluse who only had people over sparingly. Turns out, Hazel was very into the occult and held seances regularly, trying to summon spirits and such. PK and I perked up at this point. After telling us about Hazel and how she passed her time, she followed up with, "You boys need to bring those back to her house and forget you saw it." Naturally, we completely ignored her instructions and kept researching. Now knowing the name of the owner, we could find out what we needed. Turns out, Hazel died in the late 60s from an unknown cause. Her not having any children or living relatives, the house and land reverted back to the county. This meant we could explore to our heart's content, not worrying about anyone chasing us away or going to jail. A few nights later, PK, another friend Nick, and I went to check out the house at night. Walking in, we found something didn't really feel right. The cupboards weren't as they were when we left the day before. They were open as if someone had been looking for something in them. We brushed this off, chalking it up to misremembering what happened. Walking towards the back of the house, we noticed the pull-down stairs in the attic were also down. Still trying to explain the differences away, we assumed the weight of the stairs on the old hinges just made it fall down on its own. At this point, we decided to check the entire house, just to be sure a homeless person wasn't living here. Finding no sign of anyone, and none of the thick dust even being disturbed besides our previous trip out there, we pushed the stairs back up and opened the cupboard door wide enough so that it held the stairs in place. We then decided to check out the basement that we never explored before. The three of us slowly filed down the stairs, trying not to put much weight on them. They were wooden and extremely rotten. That was another rule we broke. Never go somewhere your escape could be compromised. Getting to the bottom, we found dozens of mason jars and candles. Now knowing the candles were used for seances, the mason jars we were a bit confused about, since we couldn't find any real purpose for them. Trying to figure it out in our heads, Nick chimed in with, "I think she was just a crazy old lady." A few seconds later, there was a huge slam upstairs. Quickly running up the stairs, ignoring how bad the steps were, we found once again the stairs to the attic were down. We broke another rule, don't talk bad about the dead, and provoke things unnecessarily. A little freaked out at this point, the three of us decided now was a good time to leave. On our way out this time, I did think it would be a good idea to put a padlock on the front door to make sure this house was left undisturbed until we came back. Later on that week, PK told our friend John and Jeff about the house. John, being half Native American, was very hesitant to go because he was very into the belief that spiritual things could attach to you. We managed to get him to meet us there though. Jeff got there after being berated and us calling him a poon for a while. PK and I decided to get to the house first and check on the padlock. Still intact, I unlocked it and we went in. As soon as we stepped in, there was the sound of broken glass in the basement. Just going low enough to shine a flashlight around, we noticed one of the jars had completely shattered. PK, being the brave soul he was, volunteered to go closer and see what might have broken it. After us talking crap to each other for a minute, I went to check it out. What I was looking for was a sign of anything falling from the ceiling that may have made it break. No signs of anything, no ceiling sediment or anything. It was a wood ceiling, so if it did come from there, it wouldn't have been hard to spot. There were no signs of anything. It looked like the glass had just spontaneously exploded with some force, sending pieces of glass clear across the basement. At this point, my phone went off. John was calling me. I answered and immediately telling him he had very bad timing. He laughed, telling me they just parked behind me and were headed to the house, so keep an eye for their flashlight. I said okay, then went upstairs to look for them. PK decided to close the cupboards and make the attic stairs go back up and block them from falling with the cupboard door again. I saw John's flashlight, but something seemed off. They got within eye shot of the house and then just stopped dead. Not sure what was really going on, I called John. In a strained voice, he said, "Can't you hear that?" I asked him what he was talking about, and he said there was a high-pitched noise that was hurting their ears. Walking into the porch of the house, I see them both. They're on their knees, holding their hands over their ears. Growing concerned, I told PK to follow me and rushed over to them. Once we got to a few feet of them, they seemed to relax and pull their hands away from their ears. John asked, "What did you guys piss off here that won't even let us get close?" Having had no issues getting there ourselves, we thought they were just being dramatic, until Jeff said, "It was like it wanted to keep us away, so it would only have you two there." Thinking back to the rules we broke, we both just went, "Crap," under our breath. Deciding it was a good time to leave, I started walking back to the house to put the lock back on the door, when there were several large bangs from the house. I shined the flashlight into the kitchen window to see all the cupboard doors open, and noticed the stairs from the attic were down once again. This is the time where I internally said F this, and decided to nope out of there. Talking to John a few days later, he told me he thought whatever was out there wasn't good, and he didn't want us going back out there anymore. He said it felt like something was woken up by our intrusion on its territory, and it wanted us, and only us. He made me promise I would never go back to that house, or he would stop being friends with me. That's how serious he was about never wanting to ever go there ever again, so one of these things couldn't attach to one of us and follow us home. Years later, I remembered the house and went to go check it out again. The trees in the area had all been cut down, and not a single sign of the house remains there now. The odd part about it is, the area had been cleared for some time now, but not a single for sale sign or even development sign had been placed in the area. It's like they just wanted to get rid of the house. This story is allegedly true. The described events occurred in 1997 in the woods near Osered. And as I'd researched further, cases of paralysis were known in the woods far to the north of Russia, and places with swamps nearby usually. A story was told to me by a friend who was a local policeman at the time. Actually, in that village of my friend, there were a lot of people who frequently went on mushroom and berry picking trips. These were so-called silent hunting trips. Some of them became the victims of the unexplainable phenomena, as well as the grandchildren of the old locals which came to visit relatives on the summer vacations and were walking in the forest. Among all, lonely travelers suffered more often, but there were cases with several victims at once. The first incident I heard about happened in March of 1997. The old local woman known by everybody as Grandma Nina went to the forest and did not return. She lived in that village all her life and knew the adjacent forest very, very well, so she hardly could be lost there. That is why her son didn't worry about her till evening. He and their neighbors went for her search. Given the circumstances, there was only one assumption that an elderly woman became ill in the woods. They found her by 4 a.m. in the forest. She was paralyzed. Naturally, no one saw anything surprising or supernatural in this. Everybody thought it was a stroke, and paramedics in the nearest city couldn't find anything suspicious. She couldn't tell by herself what exactly happened to her. Everybody was satisfied with reasonable explanations, age, and health conditions. In July of the same year, two boy teenagers were visiting their grandparents on the summer vacations. They were found in the forest, one in paralysis, and the other in extreme severe shock and numbness. By July, Grandma Nina had already passed away. The paralyzed teenager was sent to the nearest city hospital, and after some time, the paralysis receded. He was able to walk. However, none of them were able to remember what had happened to them. God knows why. Maybe they didn't remember from, you know, all the aftershock, but maybe they just didn't want to remember. In that year, there were no more cases, so these incidents were forgotten until the next in 1999. In that summer, seven different people were found paralyzed and were partially rehabilitated after. Each went to the forest at different times and under different circumstances, alone. Naturally, after this, bad rumors began to circulate among this forest. They began to call it Basilisk Forest because people fell into the unexplainable stupor. Despite the interrogations of participants or some witnesses, police failed to find out the truth. The only common thing that they could find out from the victims who regained their senses was dead silence in the forest at the time of the attack, which, in general, indicates the presence of a large predator in the area. Despite local warnings about the Basilisk Forest, some visitors ventured into the forest along the right bank of the river in most cases. Everything ended well. But in 2000 and 2001, there were two cases of paralysis again, and they remained unexplained as well. Some additional information for investigators appeared only in 2003 when the attack occurred in the winter on a poacher who went to find a bear's den. Apparently, he disturbed the wrong hole because he was found paralyzed and dead due to long exposure and hypothermia. At the site of the quote-unquote attack on the snow, traces were left from a very large snake. But since snakes are cold-blooded animals and cannot attack in winter due to hibernation, not to mention the fact that snakes of very large sizes are not found in our fauna at all, investigators dismissed this probability as impossible. In addition, there were no signs of suffocation on the man's body, and alcohol in the blood was not found during the autopsy. As my friend told me, some mystical, inexplicable events continue there, and What their reason for? No one knows. I am a 15-year-old girl, and this happened about a year and a half ago to me, in the middle of September, sometime around 5:30. It was almost dark, so I was maybe 13 or 14 at this time. Everyone knows me as a tomboy and a very curious person. I and my friend Matthew were very bored one day because all of the neighborhood kids couldn't play outside with us. We were told not to go into the woods at the back of our neighborhood. There is a fence you have to crawl under because there is barbed wire separating it. So us being bored and alone went into the woods to discover new things. There were some weird things in that forest, such as an old desk, mattress, and abandoned semi-trailer. Despite what we found, we kept going. The entire time I felt the feeling of being watched, but shook it off as me being scared or something like that. We weren't supposed to be there, you know, so obviously if we got caught in the woods, we would have been in trouble. After about 10 minutes of walking, we came across a trail going up to a clearing. If you turned up around on the top of the trail, you could see an old shack that someone lived in. After this, we turn around and start walking back down the trail, when suddenly, we heard a laugh. This laugh was like a clown laugh and very high-pitched. Matthew started saying, "Let's go up the trail." I knew this was a bad idea because that clearing at the top was a dead end. I then, trying to say in a calm voice, "Oh, that was my Halloween app telling me it's about time to be Halloween." This worked, and I walked as fast as I could to the bottom of the trail, as did Matthew. As soon as we got to the bottom, I yelled that we should run. We sprinted, and I could hear some sticks breaking behind us, but I didn't dare look back. We climbed under the barbed wire fence. I cut my leg a little bit, but I didn't stop running. I kept going as fast as I could. We got to his house right beside the forest and both fell in his front yard, looking at each other. As soon as I caught my breath, I ran home. I never really told my parents about this incident. About a month later, I told a girl in my neighborhood what happened, and she looked pale and terrified. She looked me straight in the face and told me and my friend went in the house in the woods, and a guy at the shack was pointing a gun at us. So, I don't want to ever meet that creepy clown laughing guy ever again, and I don't really know what his intentions were, but they don't sound good if he points guns at children. When I was younger, about 10 or 11, my best friend Jason and I both loved making forts outside during our recess time at school. Both of us wanted to spend more time making forts and actually making them livable. So I invited him to come over to my house because there was a huge forest area about a 10-minute walk from there. My parents wouldn't be home, but we weren't left totally unsupervised because my brother there, who was 16, was watching us. He also had a bunch of his friends over to spend the night that day, so I was able to have Jay come over and spend the night. It was around 5 p.m, the sun was still kinda out when I told my brother that Jay and I were gonna go play outside. He wasn't really listening to me and just said, "That's fine, do whatever you guys want, I don't care." We went out the back door and made our way to the woods. It was a fenced off area, but there were a couple of holes that we could both sneak through. We started walking through the woods trying to find a nice spot to set up our fort. We brought a backpack with us filled with some food, water, duct tape, and brought our pocket knives. When we finally found a good spot, we started collecting wood and built a nice fort that took a while. The sun was slowly beginning to fade away. Then, started working on the interior. It was a fun time until I walked out and realized it was very late and the moon was out. And that's when all the light we had faded. I told Jay it was probably best that we left, but he said, "It's probably only 8, and my brother wouldn't care." Keep in mind, we were only both 10 or 11 at the time, and neither of us had a cell phone. I said okay, and we continued to build our fort, and took a break and started eating until I heard voices and twigs breaking around us. I told him to be quiet. I heard more footsteps and got worried, as I was about to run like hell, till I heard leaves crunch right next to our fort. I covered my mouth to hide my breathing, and Jason did the same. There was no obvious entrance into our small wooden fort, and it was sealed together with duct tape so no one could get in unless, you know, they were our age and small enough. We heard some chattering till somebody went, "Shh." Seconds felt like hours till I looked at Jay and he pointed up with his other hand. I looked up and saw two faces looking down through the cracks of the wood. I yelled and we broke through the fort and we both sprinted away in random directions. We heard them right behind us running at us. We both stopped to catch our breath. We didn't know where we were at all. Jay pointed in a random direction and said we should go this way. I didn't question him because I didn't have any better ideas, so we walked that way. We started talking about what just happened till I saw a light coming from the left of us. It was kind of bobbing up and down and I realized that it was the flashlight Jay and I had left and climbed the tree, rested on a branch waiting for them to pass. It was four people walking below us. I couldn't make out who they were or what they were saying. We waited a little bit before climbing back down and started walking towards where they had just come from. Eventually we saw a fence and jumped it, and in the distance we could see a small park that I recognized, and we made our way there until I found the same pathway to my house. We made it back to my house and my brother and his friends didn't even know we were gone for so long. We got home at around 10:30 p.m. No one else knows about this story except for the two of us. We don't know who those people were and if they meant to harm us. If I had to guess, I'd say they were just teenagers exploring, kind of like we were doing. Except, why would they be chasing us around like that? I have no idea. Thanks for listening to these creepy, allegedly true deep woods exploration stories. I don't know about you guys, but these stories really had me on the edge of my seat while reading them. I hope you enjoyed them, and if you did, please hit that like button, as it really does help me out a ton. If you want to hear more scary stories just like these ones, be sure to subscribe and be sure to turn on all notifications to never miss a new video. I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. Do you have a story that you would like to share in a future video? Have you seen a Sasquatch, encountered a ghost, or something else? I would love to share your story. Send that in at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. It's stories like yours that truly help this show keep going. If you're not aware, you can download all of your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and pretty much everywhere else you listen to stories online. Thanks as always, guys, for supporting the Swamp the way you do. We recently hit 175,000 subscribers. I could never have imagined this milestone when I first started this channel, and it's absolutely crazy to see this many people dwelling here. I really, really appreciate that. I guess onward to 200,000. Let's see if we can't make that happen this year. Before we end this video, I have a question for you guys. What kind of stories would you like to hear for the end of the summer? I would love to know your thoughts. I know a lot of people are probably going to say skinwalker stories, but let's keep it a little more original. Give me some topics you might not have seen before. I'd love to break new ground. See you guys soon with another creepy video.